station number 1032, rule 4.
Anything or done.
Oh.
You know, if I'd have been in prison.
Oh, I see.
A class, anything or done. They'd stop your money. And that's what they told her, see. So eventually she went to the Admiralty and they gave her all the money she wanted. So she was out of trouble. But that's a nasty letter she wrote to me about have I been naughty and all that. When I left Naples, I'd done another foolish, very foolish thing. I picked up a dog that was strayed because the ship wasn't finished. She was still doing repairs. And I suppose we was there about 3 weeks. And in that meantime, I used to go all over the place. Because Naples, they say, see Naples and die. It was very pretty, I liked it. And I picked this dog up, I took him aboard, and he got fat and he got well, because he was starved. And I had him for a mate, and because we used to keep him on the barge, you know, always had dogs. And anyhow, the captain told me we're all ready to go, you better get rid of your dog. So I didn't want him to starve again, but you might think I was a cruel man to do it again. But I put him in a sack with a weight and I dumped him at sea. Do you think I was cruel? Oh, that's good. Well, that's what I done with him. And away we go. And on our way, when we got through the Straits of Messina, I was right in the convoy, we was all right. And bang, I knew what it was, a torpedo, and it was a slow coach, you know, not coming out all on her own, loaded, and it as quick as that, loaded, ship, there, all that lot got drowned,
oh dear.
Captain, the mate, and all the crew, and all down below, but at the end, they used to have to put the coal, I know it was a coal barge, but all the coal barges, they had to, because we were so short of coal, they had to put them up right in the convoy and make sure they got up to their destination. Well, anyhow,
This ship that was sunk by the torpedo.
Yes.
That was one that was sailing with you, wasn't it?
Sailing with us, but he couldn't keep up with our, you know, it was our last ship. I don't know what it was loaded with, but as a rule they were very particular about coal ships, because from years and years and years we built all the coal places up at all the way of India, Ceylon, everywhere you went, they ships for years and years had built them up. And the fastest sailing ship was in Port Said. That was where they used to run up one plant and down the other. And they got a ticket, you know, and they dumped it. And they about three quarters of a hundredweight, they had baskets. And they were the fastest sailing ships, coaling ships. Because it was all coal, remember, still all coal. And we coaled. And away we, after we got through, we went through the Straits, and we got to, I forget the name of that coaling station there, it was a big coaling station, and we coaled, and then we went on to Ceylon. I went on at Ceylon, and we went in there, and we used to see the black boys diving over, if it was only for silver, not copper, and they'd dive right down and get it. And there's a ship coming out of what name now? Coming out of Malta. And I brought my wife and myself, I had it, and I got it. I bought it in Ceylon, a lovely picture on satin, black satin, done in gold wire, of a dragon. And my daughter's got it in Jersey. She collared it. And
Where were you actually going? Where was your final...
We went to Malaysia. It was Indonesia, I think, then, wasn't it? And we went right through there. We went to Dutch East Indies. And we loaded sugar. We loaded sugar for Switzerland. And we loaded the sugar, and then on our way, when we loaded the sugar at Palma or somewhere?
Java. Maybe Java.
Java. We went to Java, and when we left Java, we went to where the great big, you've got to take your hat off to the English, you've got to straight you out. There's all the rubber trees in what is now Malaysia, all rubber trees. And the people growing the rubber trees hadn't been home for years. And we picked up the wife and the husband who was running the place, and their children, babies. And when they come aboard, I done their washing, and they gave me all their rupees when they left, you know, when they got to Port Sen. And I had a colliery belt. Well, on the way back, we come through a typhoon. That's a saying coming up, blowing gales. And we had to get the Indians amidship there. So I helped to put ropes out so that they could hold a rope, you know, because we had a Japanese carpenter, and the Japanese carpenter got injured when I joined the ship. He left the ship at halfway, you know, where I just spoke about where I bought this lovely picture. And he left us there, and I took his job over. That's finding out the water, the depths and all that. And I was hoping to, you know, stay there. Well, anyhow, coming through this typhoon, after shutting all the doors and all that, I got dirty. So I got a kettle of water. We had them great big kettles, what the army had. I got it, and I'm going to have a bath, you know, clean myself. And I got up there, and I jerked myself in the water, boiling hot water went over this arm. And I fell on the side, and it damaged this shoulder, an arm. And when I got to Port Said, I didn't get out. I thought myself, I'll wait till I get to we landed in what's the last of
Marseille? Yes,
that's right. That's quite right. When I got to Marseille, I got out there, and they put me in a military hospital, and the war's just over. And in this field where I went to, there's about 10 marquees taking all the wounded soldiers and all of them in there. And after I was better, they burnt all my clothes, rupees and all. All of it got burnt because of the lice. That was their rules. So I couldn't help. I had nothing. And when I got up the first time, I got out and my gear and I had a shave. The soldier next door told him, he said, give us a shave, Jack. I never shaved anybody on there. I shaved him. I shaved all the ward. I suppose there was about 30 in the ward, or 20, 10 each side in the marquee. And when it was meal time, I sat up there and I took the meals round to them. And when it was changing the beds for them, I helped the nurse, and the head nurse was signing me, unfit for travel. And that's how I carried on.
So when did you get home then?
Oh, it was a long while. It was a long while. And it was, I don't know, it was a long while. And eventually I said to this lady, she was a head one, a real lady. She gave me her address and told me she'd see me in peacetime, made a friend of me. And she said, I've been signing you on foot for travel. She said, because you brought it on yourself. You've been so helpful. And she used to have an afternoon at Marseille. I had an afternoon at Marseille and the nurse had an afternoon. So we all had a... When I left, she's going to miss me. But the war's all over. And they put me in a cot case to go back to Chatham. So in this cot case I go right up to hospital and there's all the naval doctors there around my bed to see what's happened to me. And I said to them, I said, I'm as good as you. I said, I'm all right. I said, but they made me come over in this cot case. I said, you're unlucky. You ain't got no work to do. I said, I'm... The nurse kept, because I made myself helpful there, the nurse kept signing me unfit for travel. So they knew what it was. They went away. They fixed me up with me clothes. And it was on a Sunday. And I come home straight on a Sunday, got my voucher and come home all in a new suit of clothes.
And that was the end of the war for you, was it?
No, that was the end of the war. Now, I'll tell you, then, they wouldn't let you out of the Navy in them times unless you had a job to go to. So what I done, I wrote to my father. He said, there's no work in the water. He said, you stay where you are. So I wrote to the Admiralty. I said, my father said he could always apprentice to him. And I said, there's no work. So they sent a form, I filled it in, and then they sent me to Dublin to take the guns off the merchant ships as they come to Dublin. I thought to myself, I'm not going to get a ship here, I'm after a merchant ship then. So I gets me hammock and me kit bag, and because it was bad to travel then if you was in a sailor's clothes in Dublin. So I was only in a blue suit. I only looked like a sailor. And away I went to Belfast. When I got to Belfast, others had done what I've done. So there was all at Belfast. I called up the ships. Oh, they got the guns up the ships there. Anyhow, no one took no notice. Nobody knew anything different. I knew that. And there I was there for about a month, I suppose. Every time a ship come in, I'd go around and find out if there's anything going. All of us did. And then we used to go up the town and we used to go to the mills and have a dance with all the girls. So we had it nice there. And then one ship come in and I went there to him and I said, oh, you're fixed. I said, I'm an old bargeman, I said, on the River Thames. I said, is that any help to you? He said, no, half it ain't, he said. He said, we want men like you. He said, if the AB's not turning, I think we'll be short of an AB tonight. So you come round at 12 o'clock and we'll see. So at 12 o'clock at night, round I goes to this, what was the name of her? I forget the name of her. Well, anyhow, she was an Irish boat. She had a red hand on her funnel. The Carriganhead, that's her name. And she was about, 15,000 ton ship, a big ship. And I got the job there. And I go down the cabin there, and I was as happy as a king, because I'm going to earn money and everything. Oh, but this is very good, what I'm going to tell you, because I was the one who spotted a mine. Well, on the way, we were going to Rotterdam with potatoes from Ireland. And when she was loaded when I went there, and away we come from Rotterdam. When we get into Rotterdam, I had no money, nothing. And they all went in the pub, and they all had a drink, the sailors. I got up in the morning when it was daylight, and I start, the ship was empty, and I starts getting all the lifebelts out, each side, myself, on my own. You know, in case of anything happens, you know, because in case they get mined. I didn't expect a mine, I've never entered my head. I'm coming out of Rotterdam. When we get into the North Sea, I'm out on this boat. They couldn't see it in the bridge. They couldn't see a thing. I see it because I was right out in the lifeboat. And I see just ahead of the ship, there was a mine. And I sing out like hell, "Oh, the port, there's a mine ahead." And the bridge heard me. They spotted, when they went, "Oh, the port," they seen the mine. Then they went, "Oh, the starboard," and we cleared the mine. That's one man being out on the lifeboat. Now you see how ships get saved.
Were there many mines about after the war?
It was left, yes, there was mines, a lot of mines after the war.
Yes, what would you have done? Would you have shot? Did you have any guns to sink?
No, what they done, the captain telephoned the men, the people that matter, and told them about the mine being there. They'd see to it.
You were saying to me earlier, when you were talking about the river, you know, the River Thames,
yeah,
that you were on it in World War Two. Is that right?
Yes.
What did you do in World War Two?
Well, in World War Two, when the war broke out in 1939, all the river men that wanted to, I went up to the Port of London office in London, and I put my name down. And then, after Dunkirk, me and another man from the gas company, we both got called up. And he was a mate of a tug, and I worked for the gas company, and I got called up with him. And we went to Yorkshire to do our training. What's the name in Yorkshire?
You were in the Navy again. You were called up.
No, I'm in the Army. The REs. Inland Water Transport. That's what I was in. IWT. REs. And when I got there at Yorkshire, what's the name of that lovely cathedral? Ripon? We went to Ripon. And that's where I got converted. Went to the church and got, because I've always been a churchman, but I've never been, you know, I've never been to communion. And then, having what I've been through, I went there. And
what work did you do in the war though?
As I done on the river. When I got, after we done our square bashing, we went to Gerlach up near the Clyde, Gerlach Head. And when we got to Gerlach Head, we're going to build a bridge for the American ships to come in and load, because London was too bad. Everywhere was too bad. So we were going to build a jetty. And I'm up there with the tug and barges again, to put the cargo in the barges. And we've got Americans there. I'm teaching the Americans how to tie barges up and how to tow tugs. The Americans I am. And a good job I did, because it served us very, very good steer when we got to France. And I'm carrying on like that. And I had a big job to do. My governor, he was a great big tug owner. The biggest tug owner, Gaisley's his name was. And he was my boss. He was my major. And he said to me, he called me Jack. He said, Jack, I've got a big job on it for you tomorrow. He said, I want you to be very smart. He said, polish yourself up. He said, because all our brassettes of Britain and our brassettes of America are coming down to see you perform. I was only a corporal, and I'd done myself up because I had the first ribbons on. And when anybody asked me, I kept my mouth shut. I let them think I was a soldier out in Gallipoli. And when I got there, it was a big job. Only a waterman or lighterman or anybody connected with the water could do it. What it was, they had a real engine, railway engine, and they couldn't put it in a landing craft because it would be over the top and it was too dangerous to tow her over to France. So I had two American tugs, seagoing tugs, big tugs, and I had two English tugs. This train, this engine, was on a great big raft they made with lines on. And the landing craft had lines right on and right down. This was the early part of the war after Dunkirk. See, and they didn't know what to do. This was supposed to be going to France, and then what I'm doing at Gerlinghead, I do in France.
Oh, you're practicing.
I'm practicing. You're right.
Yes.
And I told all the four tugs what to do with a whistle, and they was doing it all. And I got the ever lifting the craft right against the landing craft. The landing craft had railway lines in right down in it. And then when we was ready, we let it down into the barge. And it was all done. And there was no accident. It was done perfect. And this is what I'll tell you now. This is the gospel truth, what I'm telling you. All our British brassettes went out. And when the Americans stayed behind, and when it was time for them to go out, they called me over. And they said to me, if you'd have been in the American army, you'd have had a commission. That's what they said to me. So there you are. I've come out top in the long run.
What was the name of the place where all that happened?
At Gerlinghead.
How do you spell that?
Gerlinghead.
Gerlock,
I think. Gerlock. G-A-L-A-R-T.
And whereabouts is that?
That's, you know, the river, there's Gerlock and all different locks, see? It's near the River Clyde. It's a tributary out of the River Clyde.
The River Clyde, yes.
That's right.
Yes,
right. And then, now this is, you've got to take notice of this. When I was at Gerlock, and the tug was there, my son was there. My youngest son was on the war spike. That was a big ship in the Second War. It went to Burma, it went everywhere. And he was in that, because when I come out of the Navy, I sent this son here, and my youngest son, to Oldbrook. It's a new place at Greenwich where they train him. When he was 11, they passed an examination. He went, My eldest son went first. My eldest son, he was on the war spike. So round, I'm only a corporal. I take the tug, which I'd never told nobody. I pinched it. I had a fireman and a driver in it. And I take around the River Clyde. There's that great big ship there, the Queen Mary, or one of them. And there was this war spike, great big battleship. And I told them who I was before I went aboard. I said, my son is aboard the ship. He's a sick bay attendant, I said. I want to see him, I said. I'm his father. So they said, all right. And I went to see him. And when I see him, he got a surprise of his life. And when I went there, all his mates was on their leave. He was stationed there, as luck happened, and he gave me all their tins of tobacco, and I used to smoke a pipe, so I come away with all the tobacco. He's doing the bombarding, and I am in charge of the only... I went to Wales to pick her up, Cardiff, and I picked up a heavy lifting crane that lifts 100 ton. And it does 15 knots. It does 15 knots, and I had a crew sent to me. And I took charge of it. I signed for it. Before that, they sent me to London, to somewhere at Whitehall. And I went to this place in Whitehall. They gave me a bill to give to the men at Cardiff. And I was made a sergeant there. And my captain was a river pilot named Tyrrell, his name was. And when I got there, I never seen no Tyrrell, no pilot. I was all on my own. And I learned all about this boat. My brain worked quick, you know, I knew what I was doing. The time D-Day came, I had her all out ready, and I'm putting a boon across with a pad so that if it rolled, the boat wouldn't get damaged. And she's all braced up, all wires round and all that.
This is a crane?
Yes, yes. This was out in the sea, ready to go over a D-Day. In there, the Admiralty was all strict, and I said to them, I said, my captain's not turned up, Captain Tyrrell, he's sick. I said, I'm the sergeant of her. I said, I can't read a chart. They said, see that destroyer? Follow the destroyer. And away I go, and I made a great fuss of that. And away I go, and I followed her over, and when I got over there, I see four great big ships sunk. We went to Alamanches, the girl, you know, the harbour. And you'll see my ship if you go in the museum over there, the ever-lifting crane. And they sent a captain then, and they sent an RSM there, and I should have been the RSM, but I wasn't. Again, I got done down.